Welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast, a just for fun production about media that matters and why we love it so much. Your host, Nathan Lamb, is not an amazing gamer, but he sure knows a few people who are. This is our conversation for today. All right, and welcome back to season two of the Amazing Gamers Podcast. I took a little break, had some time to recharge over the summer, and I'm diving back in to discuss the most recent game I completed, which was Final Fantasy Rebirth. And I have a very special guest today, one of my first friends that I made in gaming social, and also an impeccable voice of reason in times where others are prone to dive in and shoot from the hip and exaggerate. So after finishing Rebirth, I felt this was a good time to reconnect with my friend Hailee Ginger from A Blue Sky, also known as Allie.
Yeah, and I'm glad to be back.
I appreciate the warnings you gave me as we were talking about it. We talked about it a couple of times. It took me forever to play that game. And you gave me some good warning and cautionary things. So when it started to kind of fall apart down the stretch, it wasn't a complete surprise for me. When I hit that wall at about 80 hours into the game, I was not like floored by it. I was like, oh, this is what everyone was talking about. Okay.
Yeah, it's it can get very lengthy. It's funny because I've seen reviews over it being overhyped and stuff. And I noticed on the list of things on this particular article where they were like, oh, it's just gotten too much attention and too much love. They put it as they finished the game in 40 hours. And I was like, oh, you did not experience the game at all, did you?
No, I think you'd have to skip like pretty much every side quest and speed run. No, it was.
I couldn't imagine doing it in 40 hours.
I was 110 hours, and I skipped Chocobo Racing, and I skipped a few things where I was just like, no. Chadley's Battle Sim, no. I was like, yes. No, not doing that. Sorry, not doing it. So I will get into that. Just one quick thing. One of the things I liked about the first season of the show was going into what matters to us this week. I do want to say I'm enjoying High Summer. I enjoyed my hiatus from being creative and outside things for about a month. I just did work and family. It was amazing. We celebrated 20 years of marriage with a nice vacation. Aww. It was a beautiful thing. And it's funny because we had about 20 chances to back out of it because we've never really done a real vacation like that. We went through with it. I'm so glad we did. And then we came home and we renovated the bedroom. So it was actually pretty cool. And I discovered the life-changing technology of reading glasses. Because I'm now at the age where if I'm wearing my contacts, I cannot read a computer screen. So I was trying to work around that. And she was like, try these. And it was reading glasses. And I was like, oh my God, this is like life-changing technology for me. So that's about it. That and finishing Rebirth. Those are the things that have mattered to me this month. And I hope you've enjoyed summer as well.
Well, I have. Me and the kiddo have been at the pool more times than I can count. She's a little fish, and something about going to the public pool as a kid just is so fascinating. You meet new people, and she's at that age where every kid is a friend. There's no such thing as you're not my friend. If you talk to me and acknowledge me, you're friend. Good age. And I hope that never dies out, because I do think people get judgmental as they get older. And I think they miss out on some things based off of just general opinions of other people. And I think that wonder and excitement of new people dies off.
I think you're right. One of the things I love the most about having a dog is like a dog kind of brings like this element of joy. Like they just kind of do. And it's an amazing thing. And I love it. And I think kids have another sort of element of joy to them with that's exactly what you're talking about there. So I'm glad that you're having a good summer as well. So I want to talk about epics today. And I want to talk about, I wanted to say, like, what kind of epic is Rebirth? Is it an epic fail? Is it come up short as an epic? Is it an undisputed classic epic? And I kind of want to go into some examples of each because I'm not entirely sure where I would put Rebirth on the spectrum.
All right. I'm going
to start with the more or less undisputed classic epics. And if you ask me to define an epic, I really couldn't do it. I'm going to use that language that Supreme Court justice used about pornography when he said, I can't describe it, but I know it when I see it. I think the first one would probably be The Lord of the Rings.
Yes. That's a very good classic.
It's a classic epic. It's a huge scale story with a bunch of characters who all have their own arcs that matter. And there's kind of like meaningful changes within it. And this sort of, it's a journey. It's a lengthy one.
That is the hallmark of an epic. It has to be lengthy.
It has to be lengthy, and it shows you some things you weren't maybe expecting to see. And I think that's on the top tier of epics. And also other ones I put up there, Watership Down.
That's a good one. I hadn't even put that in there.
Oh, God. And mentally, that's a short book. That's like a 300-page book. But I think it is kind of epic because it's this movement of a people to a different place where they're safe. And then once they get there, they have a whole nother adventure of ensuring that it continues into the future and the fight against the Efrafin rabbits, which, yeah. Oh, man. And I watched that when I was about 7 or 8 with my kids. So,
That's a brutal one to watch.
With my parents. My parents were watching it on public television. No, I would not show that to my son. He would never forgive me. I would never hear the end of it. I was like 8 or 9, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. The original animated movie is still amazing. It holds up really well. But I remember at the video store, they had the big plastic box for it and had a huge sticker on it that said, this is not a children's movie.
I'm glad they did, because I know a number of people who their parents thought it was, and they traumatized their kids, and the parents were livid. Oh. But I do want to point out some of the hallmarks of an epic so that, you know, people can kind of get a good idea of what is an epic overall, because we all can think of certain epics, but there's a generalized trope for an epic. So historically, it's based off of Iliad and Odyssey. It can go back further than that to the Epic of Gilgamesh. And so basically, it's a long journey. It is a hero who has very difficult decisions that they have to make along the way, and a lot of self-sacrifice along the way. And then there's a social mirror that is in place for whatever era that is. And so, like with Lord of the Rings, you know, you've got this war, good versus evil, and that is as historic as it gets. Yeah. And then another hallmark tends to be divine or magical guidance along the way. And we see that with Gandalf. Yeah. There is sort of a universal message along that way, too.
Well, and there's the mythology in Watership Down.
Yes, a large mythos and lore is another hallmark.
Yep.
Go for it real quick.
I was just going to say, and also there's a connection to World War II in Watership Down, because a lot of the characters in Watership Down were based off of characters the author met in the war. Hazel and Bigwig were based on people he met during the war. And I have to think the Efrafin lifestyle was inspired to some extent by fascism.
I will agree that fascism is a hallmark of a thing to battle against in epics. And this is where I'm going to pitch my favorite oddball modern epic, which is Star Wars. You've got Luke. He is the hero. And it usually goes from, epics tend to throw you in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
You can get other things along the way to supplement the story, like prequels, sequels. You get The Hobbit with Lord of the Rings and so on. But in general, the initial epic is started in the smack middle of things. And you see that in Star Wars. Fascism is what's going on with the Empire. Yeah. Luke is your hero, and he has divine guidance through the spirit of the Force, through those that had used the Force and used it. He's got Obi-Wan, he's got Yoda. And then they become spirit ghosts, essentially, and guide him along his way. It is not an easy choice. He had to basically lose everything to make the decision to join the cause.
Yeah.
You know, he could have easily said, no, I'm just going to go back to the, you know, the water harvest stuff and continue on that with Tatooine and not even get involved.
Yeah.
But his cards got played for him. And then you see that in Lord of the Rings, you know, the very start of the entire journey, Bilbo just throws a big party and then poof. And now the rest of the little hobbits have to deal with everything, and same for Gandalf.
That's
so he gets
true.
thrown
And that's
into the
sort of,
middle of it.
and that's like at the 11th hour of the Dark Lord's machinations too, like when they become
Yeah.
aware of the danger.
So there's those tropes that you see it, and you also see it in just about each Final Fantasy game as well. Each Final Fantasy tends to be an epic.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use your parallel of Lord of the Rings, but I'm going to compare it to The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Peter Jackson made wonderful movies. It is literally
Ooh.
faster to read the book than
Yep.
it is to watch the Hobbit movies.
Oh my gosh. I had
And
the Hobbit movies on
this
my
is
list
what
too. Go,
I
please
love
go.
them. I love them, but it is so much faster to actually read the book. And this is where Rebirth comes into mind, is they stretched it out.
Yep.
They filled the gap, and just like Peter Jackson did. And it is so much faster to play the original title than it is to play
Preach.
Rebirth
Oh my
on its
God,
own.
preach. Preach. I had the Hobbit in I had the Hobbit movies in here as well for much the same reasons. And I think that the thing I would say is the single fundamental mistake Peter Jackson made with the Hobbit movies is he decided to make them a full-blown prequel to The Lord of the Rings and to make it try to make it epic. And it's not. It's Bilbo's story. Everything is from Bilbo's point of view in The Hobbit. It is absolutely Bilbo's story. If you took that approach with the Hobbit movies, and boy, we can keep this Rebirth parallel going here. If you took the parts of the Hobbit movies that were just that, it would have been pretty strong. It would have been like
Oh, absolutely.
Martin Freeman was perfect as Bilbo. Like, no complaints. And like, he
Excellent
nailed these scenes.
casting.
Yeah. And I liked some of the things they did. Like, they gave some of the dwarves more of a personality than they had. Because basically, like, Thorin had a personality. Balin was like the old dwarf who was nice to Bilbo. There was like a million jokes about Bomber being overweight. And that was about the extent of the personality that, and Finley and Killy were young. That was about the extent. And the movie did a decent job of sort of making them each individuals and giving a lot of them scenes. So there was some, but there was a tipping point. I think like Rebirth, there was that tipping point. There's that tipping point where you're like, this has gone on a little long here. This is feeling a little bit stretched. Can I throw out some questionable epics before we get to the epic fails? Because I'm with
Ooh,
you on the Hobbit
yes.
movies, and they see this is where do I put Rebirth in with the Hobbit movies? Because they do have a lot in common, and I'm going to
They
do
do.
the questionable epics, and I don't want to touch any nerves here. These are the ones where you can get in trouble. Stephen King's Dark Tower series.
Yeah, I could see that.
Did you ever read it?
It's, I actually have the graphic novels of them. I've read most of them as the graphic novel. I do need to go read the original, but they did fantastic art for the graphic novels that they put out. It was
And
beautiful.
you liked it. And you liked it.
I enjoyed it, but I also thought it was an interesting take, kind of the spaghetti Western feel of a
Yes.
fantasy. And you don't see that done terribly often. The only other thing I can think of that followed that spaghetti Western with a type of fantasy is actually the oh no, I'm drawing a blank. Firefly series. They
Yes.
did,
Yes.
it's a epic fantasy but in space, and it's got that spaghetti Western feel to it.
It certainly did. That was a really good show. Definitely with you on that. I read the first Gunslinger. I'm one of those people who's read a lot of Stephen King up to about Y2K. I kept up with him pretty good until around Y2K, and then I've read most of his books except for The Dark Tower, and it sort of didn't like how he tried to have The Dark Tower encroach on everything he wrote eventually. I did not like that. So I haven't read the Dark Tower book, so I can't weigh in on it. I read Insomnia, where he's giving me chapter and verse on how Pet Sematary fit into his Dark Tower philosophy. And I was like, dude, we don't care. I was like, I do not care. I was like, you're making me wish I was reading Pet Sematary, which was a good book, man. Like, Pet Sematary is off the rails. It is like Stephen King at his wildest. Like, that is, oh man, like that was back when he could just like bang one out. So I was like mixed. I read The Gunslinger in high school, and I felt like that was a rough draft of an idea. I thought it was very clearly inspired by like Sergio Leone and the spaghetti westerns. I could feel that because his books are great, but I could tell that he was still kind of workshopping it. And I think he went back and rewrote The Gunslinger, the first book, when he had a better idea what he was talking about. So I probably
And see,
should give it
that's where
another
my
chance.
experience might be different because the graphic novels I read, they were starting to drop in the late 2000s. So there's been time to work on it and edit it. And I don't know what the original is. I have not done that. I do need to go back and do that. But, and I could have fallen in love with it alone just for the art style. I am a sucker for that as well.
You're giving me hope. I love comics. So I love comics. I absolutely love comics. So you're giving me hope, because that was, it's funny because I really like Stephen King's work. I think he's like the 20th century Charles Dickens. I think he should get more respect for how awesome he was as a storyteller, as a spinner of yarns. I thought he was fantastic. That was one I couldn't get into. So it's interesting to hear. The another one, the divisive one, this one is near and dear to my heart, Silmarillion, which is like the first stage back lore of Tolkien's Middle Earth, which 99% of people read about 20 pages. Like, what the hell is this? Because he really does begin at the beginning. And
it's hard to follow. And I will admit that I have not finished my copy. I have a paperback. I have not finished. I do need to go back. It's not that I have a bad habit of starting many books. And I've got like six that I'm still working my way through. Seven if you add this title. I go down rabbit holes and like, oh, I like this author. I'm just going to read everything they put out now. And I get sidetracked.
Oh my God, yeah. The completionist with Catholic. Do you want, I can give you a lifeline on the Silmarillion, which I could throw out to anyone who's ever wanted to. Get the Atlas of Middle Earth so that you can see the maps that go with the beginning of the story. And then you can sort of see, like, you can see everything on the map for how the story develops, because there are moments in the Silmarillion that are as good as anything in the Lord of the Rings. And I would love the right adaptation to sort of bring those into the public imagination, because there's, it's like a unique epic. It basically has an epic amount of time for setup, and then it has like three main stories at the end, which all involve heroes who are the ancestors of Aragorn, basically. It's got like, you know, epic battles with the elves and the original Dark Lord, and then sort of like the original men getting stuck in the middle of that, which was not great for them. It does the whole beginning of the Earth. It's important because it's all set up. It has an amazingly lengthy amount of setup before it starts to sort of shake and move and actually come to life a bit. So I don't blame anyone for not finishing Silmarillion. I love it. I hopefully someday we can get a hashtag going, Fëanor did nothing wrong, which is officially the hottest Tolkien take possible. I don't know if you've read far enough, but yeah, Fëanor is one of the original High Kings of Elves. And I'm in the column of people who think he did a lot of things wrong, but there was a Reddit meme at one time that said that he did nothing wrong. He's no Gandalf, he's no Aragorn, I'll put it that way. He's kind of more of like a Denethor type character. He's like a massively flawed character, and like fatally flawed.
And I would say that that is also a big hallmark for epics, is having characters that are extremely flawed as individuals, because, I mean, look at Han Solo, look at some of the others. Even Gandalf himself has flaws. We love him, but he has his own flaws. And it's to remind us that we are all flawed beings. We will never be perfect. And sometimes we will make bad choices in an attempt to do the right thing.
It's interesting. The epic flaws. I like this. Yeah, he definitely. And he swears an ill-advised oath that has repercussions that resound through the entire story. It sort of twists and drives the action, because it's like an oath you can't get out of. Sort of a trap of his own making through pride. It's good stuff. The final one I'll throw in the questionable epic, Song of Ice and Fire.
Yes. Oh, goodness.
Boy,
especially with how the TV show's been going. My goodness. Epically flawed.
It's, you know, if you just quit after the first three books, it might be remembered as like the greatest epic ever. I'm still on the side of that it was overall like a net good. I have serious doubts it will ever be finished. I'm in the same boat. That interest them more now. What's up?
I agree with you on that. I don't think we'll get it finished, but for different reasons. I think he gave his generalized outline to HBO on what the two final books are supposed to be. And due to the public fallout for how it went, and my beef with the end of the HBO show is that, spoiler alert, if Danny has a descent into madness, and they did not elaborate that descent into madness. All of a sudden, she is just betrayed a few times, and now she doesn't trust anyone, is out for blood. Like, the descent into madness was not elaborated upon. Her betrayals were not a focus. And you can see how she could get to that point. But they just instantly was like, oh, mad queen in public discourse, instead of, no, there needs to be more elaboration. So I think he gave that outline, and based on how poorly public response, I think he scrapped it and is redoing it all together. And I don't know if he'll finish it before he kicks the bucket. And he does have his attention pulled in so many different ways.
Yep.
Because he's going in, he's like writing backgrounds for backgrounds for backgrounds now, trying to get things pulled together. And I do think the prequel books, the prequel book, the TV series now, is testing to kind of see, hey, how would they feel about these ideas instead?
Maybe testing the waters. I thought Dunkin' Egg was kind of like The Hobbit to Song of Ice and Fire's Lord of the Rings. I think he probably found Dunkin' Egg more interesting and accessible after laboring on that epic forever to just tell some good stories, which is basically what Dunkin' Egg was. I think so. I think the Daenerys thing, I think that goes back to your concept of epic flaws, where I think, you know, like they have things where initially she has a very black and white view of anyone who opposed her father, and she becomes more nuanced over time. And the explanation I've heard for the final part, where she does become more rigid when she comes to Westeros, where she feels she needs to enforce her claim and be harsh in a way that she wasn't really in a lot of other places in the book. But when she actually goes to King's Landing, it becomes real for her. And I think that was too sudden. I understand, like I think the theory of what she was going to do got replaced with the reality of just it all becoming very real, and I'm going to burn this place to the ground, basically, instead of...
And I can understand that.
It didn't really... It wasn't really... See, that was like one where, like, if you don't stick a landing, it makes people question the whole thing.
There is another side theory that I like, and this is just fan theory. There is nothing to uphold it. It is based off the TV show. They don't even... I've read all the books that he's put out so far, and until he puts out more, we can't really correct anything on this, but there is a thought process going around that Bran is actually the bad guy, that Bran warged into the dragons and burned it down so that there wouldn't be another Targaryen on the throne, because it was more important that they deal with, you know, the winter that was going on, sort of a thing. And that it's interesting that he became king after that, everything that went down, of all the people to take the throne.
Yeah.
Who would suspect the broke kid?
That's true. I think I see where I was going to say that sounds like it's reminding me of MatPat a little bit, but I can sort of see it, because it sort of ascribes a deviousness to Bran that I'm not sure that we saw, but it's been a while since I read the books.
And the main reason why somebody had put that out there is because he has no problem using other people to accomplish his goals.
Mm.
And you see this with Hodor quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Hold the door.
And he's comfortable with it. He's comfortable taking over other people and working through people. And, you know, after his fall, he did become the three-eyed raven, which works in mysterious ways. And it often is perceived as manipulative. That's the only reason why I'm interested in that theory, because we don't get to see what Bran does beyond the wall. And that, like, HBO shows his stuff, but Our lovely Martin has not quite given us what we need yet to confirm or deny any of these things.
It's true. It's true. You can't close the door on the theory, because we just don't know enough. So, okay. So maybe Bran will become this super villain. But yeah, a lot of people, it left a bad taste in people's mouth. And I think that's another good example of the ending of Rebirth. Like, I'd say, like, the first 40 hours of Rebirth, I had more fun with it than I've had with a Final Fantasy game in a very long time. And the music by Nobuo Uematsu, and the expansion of the characters, and the story beats, and the things that it does well, all of that early on, and the way that the group coalesces into a group together, I loved all of that. And then in the third act, it goes away from all that. It starts spinning this very convoluted story to set up the third game. And I just was not interested in any of it. And it was just, you know, I think there was parts in the final act that were good. But, like, one example of where things were piling up instead of building was that had, like, the trials where it showed all the party members the lowest point in their lives. And Aerith has a brief speech after, which I think kind of sums up what Final Fantasy VII has always meant to me, was that you cannot change the past. You have to come to terms with it and then decide what you're going to do now. And then Cloud's like, are you done? And then that was it. And you never heard about it again. And it was kind of like that. It had some good moments in there. Like the goodbye to Aerith was great too, but it was just sort of buried amid a lot of stuff that didn't really land with me. That was where.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, which is why I made the parallel to the, not the book, The Hobbit, but the movies. And I'm not talking the awesome, adorable animated one that I fell in love with as a kid.
I love that one. My son and I have watched that many times. It's perfect because you can actually watch that with a kid, and it's for, The Hobbit is for kids. Kids identify with Bilbo because he is the little guy.
Yes, I loved The Hobbit before I grew to love Lord of the Rings. My dad loved Lord of the Rings, tried to get me into it, and I just could not get into it until he gave me The Hobbit. Once we had The Hobbit in my hands, I became obsessed.
Yeah, The Hobbit was good. The Hobbit was, and it's like two stories. It really is like, first Bilbo's a fish out of water, and then it's sort of, he does become a hero in his own fashion. He finds his own style of becoming a hero. And I think that's why kids love it, is because I think it has a lot of things that really resonate for kids and land. And some of the scenes in the movie, the scene in the movie where Bilbo goes back to the dwarves when they're finally fed up with him and he earns their respect, is a great scene. And it's like, they didn't need all this padding around it. Like, if you had a leaner movie that just sort of leaned into that thing, we can only question, can we get the short version? I don't want the extended version, PJ. Can you cut it down to what it should have been and give it all the violence that makes it so I can't, like, my son watched that dwarf get beheaded and he's like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, like, that's fair.
I didn't need to see Azog killing Farrar, you know? Why?
It's fair.
Oh my gosh. So the Hobbit movies were in my epic fails, and the Hobbit movies are there for all the reasons we've discussed. The Michael Bay movies, I'm sorry. I have to do this. I've never seen Pearl Harbor. I know Pearl Harbor is an epic fail, even without having seen it. I have seen Armageddon. And Armageddon is one of those ones where I think from a technical perspective, you can probably appreciate it and have fun with it under certain circumstances. I felt like it was a lot of sound and fury that kind of just piled up over the course of 3 hours. And at the end of it, I was like, what did I just see?
That is very fair.
I know he has fans, but it was just, so for me, he was like straining to be epic. He was throwing in everything with the kitchen sink, kind of like the re-series. And now that I've sort of outlined these three tiers, I'm not really sure where I'd put Rebirth. This question I had after it was over, where I wanted to call in a friend who is a voice of reason, is, would I recommend Rebirth to a friend? I guess I'll put that to you first.
It would be the same situation as what I did with you.
Yep.
It's worth playing. Yeah. However, don't let yourself get bogged down with side quests and mini games. Do it if you feel like it, but it is not required to experience the story. There are some side stories that build depth into the characters, but in general, most of the depth has already been built into the primary storyline.
Yeah.
And I think that the nods that you'll see from the side quests are for the diehard people that are looking for every little minute detail. So like Peter Jackson, like with the Hobbits, he's a diehard fan. He loves him some Lord of the Rings. He loves Tolkien so much. Oh. And it shows in his work. He had extended versions of all of the Lord of the Rings, and they were already long movies as it was.
Was good. So, those were good. Like, even the extended versions were good. I liked the extended versions. You could not pay me to watch the extended version of The Hobbit if there is one. I just no, man. It was long enough to begin with. No.
It was long enough to begin with. And that's where you get into the whole, sometimes there's too much that is put into the hero's journey in an epic. And you see that with Final Fantasy. Not all of the side quests build Cloud's character.
No.
And they don't end up growing to define him, but if you follow just the main storyline, it's decent. And the only reason I'm going to say decent, and this is my big beef with this, and I do understand why they did it the way they did it, but you're judging the middle of a book. You're not getting the full context. That would be like throwing somebody immediately into the Two Towers just being like, figure it out. So it's one of those things. Play the first title, remake, then play Rebirth in order to have the context, or just play the original game and then you can play Rebirth and you'll understand it a bit better. But there's no satisfying end because the story continues. There's no satisfying real start because that satisfying start of the hero's journey was in Remake. So we're trying to judge a piece that's not technically complete.
And I think this is the problem I had with Remake. And now I'm going to segue into what we're playing now, because I want to give an example of this done correctly. I'm going to give my pitch for the Trails series, because the Trails series, people are like, oh my God, it's like 16 games long. I think the thing I cannot stress enough is that each game stands on its own merits. If you just played Trails in the Sky, you have a complete experience. You have an arc. You have mysteries. Some of them are solved in the first game. Other ones you don't know. And like that sort of keeps you going. But there's such a complete arc. And it's like, if I played Trails in the Sky about 2 years ago, I could not help but contrast it with the Reese series and just how each chapter of the Trails in the Sky trilogy was not only complete in and of itself, but each built on the other, so that by the end, you really have this satisfying arc. And even though it continues, because I'm on the fifth game now, like I'm just more and more into it as I discover more of this world. Because my friend Maggie, who introduced me to it, she did the Persona to Trails pipeline. And it's because a big part of Trails is initially you see people and they're doing things and you don't really have any perspective as to why they are behaving the way they are. And a hallmark of Trails is that over time you do see more of the characters and you start to understand. And there's characters I did not like initially who I came to be very fond of. And there's ones where, there were ones where I didn't think much of who I grew to dislike very much. So there's definitely, it's like a journey of discovery. But I think that the key is that there's this sort of arc in each of them where it takes you somewhere. You went on a journey. You weren't left hanging. You had something happen. And in Remake, it was basically like, let's go outside. And in Rebirth, I was like, okay, we've gone outside. We've looked around. What do we do now? And I would say Rebirth was much better when it focused on the group becoming a team. And when they went away from that, it kind of decreased. And the thing that I'll throw out, the final Trails thing I'll add, is that when I played the second arc of Trails, because there's several arcs, the first three is Trails in the Sky, I'm playing the Crossbow ones, which is, I think, two games. It's a new cast. Some of the old cast members show up in it. Like, they're in the same world. It's still the same story. It's just moved on to someone else. And it's a group of four police officers who are with a special civilian support system. Basically, they're police who help people. And they are four oddballs who could not be more different. And the story of the first one is how they are, spoilers, but they become a team. It was very similar to Rebirth. And when Rebirth was doing that, it was kind of cooking. It's like, ooh, you have my interest. And then it sort of went away from that. And I think the difference with Trails, it always builds. Like, Final Fantasy will have a thing where some impactful scene happens and it's never mentioned again.
Right.
Trails will have, like, the shopkeeper, like, the NPC shopkeeper will remember you from the previous game and will remind you of the fetch quest you did for them.
Like, that's cute. I love that.
And it's the kind of game where every shopkeeper has a name and you have the option of talking to them. And a lot of it doesn't really impact much. And every time you advance the story, you can go back to the NPCs and they will have something different to say. And they will remind you of like how you interacted with them in the previous game. When I played the second game in Crossbell, there's a part where they tell you, go and explore. And in the first one, I got to know the map. The second one is the same map. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to here. I'm going to go back to here. I'm going to check in with all the people that I got to know. I know that probably doesn't sound exciting, but it pulls it off. And you can sometimes get hidden items and hidden side quests by doing that. So it definitely encourages you to sort of, if you're the person who goes into a town and talks to everybody, this is probably the game.
Well, and you see that with a lot of epics in general. This is an epic book that most people will probably feel is not epic because there's not like this divine intervention. And our hero is not quite the unwilling hero because it runs off D&D, but Bookshops and Bone Dust and then Legends and Latte, they're both kind of comfy cozy. But you'll see in the prequel book, characters and relationships forming from just casual interactions from the first book appear into, you get the background story, you see the connection flow through. So in the next book, I expect that some of those relationships established in the prequel will pop up as well.
So what sort of adventure is this? Is this like a graphic novel or is this like a novel?
This is a full novel. You can read it. They also have audiobooks, but basically the idea of it is that there is an orc, and while she was doing her stuff with her party, she comes across a place that sells coffee, and she loves it. She gets out of the merc business and straight up opens a coffee shop. And the people who used to work with her on the merc business end up getting involved with that coffee shop as well. And so the prequel book basically goes into how she finds out about coffee, and she's injured at the time. So she's just camped out at this village. And that's when she finds out about the coffee shop. But in the process, you know, she helps this bookshop owner get things going. And that's how you get the bone dust and bookshops going. And some of those characters pop up in the next one as the coffee shop is built. She opens it up. And then, of course, you run into a town that, you know, you got to pay these people. They're extortioning and so on. Oh my God. It's interesting because even these small little characters that you're like, oh, that's just a passing character, they come back and they're part of the story. Even though it may have been just a small little thing, they end up being such a big part of the story that you didn't see it connecting in that way. And it's not like it was some big, like, surprise, but it's a gentle kind of cozy reminder that, you know, things are connected.
And you like, and this was one you would wholeheartedly recommend.
Oh, this book series, yes, it is very cozy. If you like Dungeons and Dragons, you will, and just a comfy, cozy read, Legends and Lattes is definitely up there on my recommendation.
That is about all the time we have today. I want to thank you, Allie. It's been so good to catch up with you again, and also to just sort of talk through my very complicated feelings on Rebirth and that whole experience of finally finishing that game that was 110 hours and felt like 1,010 hours.
Yeah, I put in 120 hours myself, and I have not touched it since then.
Oh, no.
It burned me out. I have not touched it. I don't actually plan on picking it up. I will never get my little platinum trophy, and I'm content with that.
I am too. I actually took a photo of like the thing because I had like a Saturday night where I was going to finish it, and I was like, I put 4 hours in, and I wasn't done. And it was like, I'm following Aerith down the path. And I took a picture, and I'm like, I'm putting this game away. I'm done. It's over. And I had friends who were like, No, you were so close. I was like less than an hour away. So I did it. I have no desire to ever play it again. And I don't really know if I'm going to get the third one. I will say I did get the Barrett date at the Gold Saucer. And I loved that. I thought it was awesome. I think it was played up for laughs in the original one.
Yeah.
I think in this one, I think it was for the fans of Barrett. I really do. It was kind of for me. I felt seen a little bit. Are you going to play Reunion when it comes out?
I think Reunion is going to be the make or break of if this series will survive this test of time or not. Right now, most people after playing Rebirth, and this is just most people I talk to, I could be talking with people who are very nostalgic, but so far the great opinion is that the original's best from what I've experienced. And this could be the people I associate with. I do like that they gave the characters so much more background in the side quests in this. I do think that they could have spread it out a little bit and made it more interesting in remake by adding some of these details to on character building and so on. It didn't have to be side quests all crammed into this one title. And I understand, at least with Aerith, we had to do that because of the end of this title. But they also leave it very ambiguous at the end of this title.
Yeah.
They're kind of pulling the multiple dimensions aspect instead of just life, afterlife sort of thing. So we'll see how it plays out. I do think the third one is going to be a make or break. I'm still debating on if it will be a day zero purchase or not.
What's day zero?
Most likely will.
What's
like just
zero?
Launch, just launch, just right the day it launches, picking up 0 day, hasn't been on the shelf that long. Versus letting it sit on the shelf for a little bit.
I'm out on that. I got Rebirth on day one and I let it sit for like a year, but I did get a hat, so that was kind of cool. But I don't think I'm day one on Reunion. I'm gonna have to think long and hard whether I play it. I probably will play it, but Allie, as always, it's been lovely to have you as my guest. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm glad I could be here.
Thank you for joining the Amazing Gamers podcast, a just for fun production that's recorded whenever Nathan has a little bit of free time and a friend to discuss a cool topic with. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and that you'll circle back with us next time. Until then, may all your gaming be amazing.